A record-setting combination of chirping, laughing, and behind-the-curtain hockey information. Dallas Stars head coach Pete DeBoer is going to join me on this episode of The Chirp with Darren Millard, plus a whole lot of trade deadline talk.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Heads up! Oh, how'd that feel, old man? I'm gonna run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Hit him. Light him up.
Yeah, nice hit. That's solid.
Welcome to the headquarters of the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard, taking you through the National Hockey League's trade deadline this week. If you want some information, if you're listening to this and the deadline hasn't happened, it's not Friday at noon Pacific or 3 o'clock Eastern, then go back and listen to Darren Dreger on last week's episode. This is like a two-for-one because a lot of the information that Dreger and I talked about and sort of speculated about what could happen still stands up at this moment. So go back, listen to that, but don't forget because Pete DeBoer is coming up in just a little bit. But as far as the trade deadline, it is absolutely sensational when it comes to what's happening in the Eastern Conference right now. I'm counting five teams that have loaded up, that are going either all in with everything or right on the edge. Toronto and Tampa Bay, they don't have draft picks until 2042. The Rangers continue to add and just add on, and somebody mentioned to me it's overkill. I don't know. I kind of like it. It's cool. New Jersey with Timo Meier in there, and Boston, already the best in the league, have just put pieces in around their lineup to make them even better. That's five of eight teams, and so that guarantees that you're going to lose a couple of clubs in the first round, which isn't great. I know people get mad about that, but Toronto and Tampa Bay would play each other anyway, and they're playing each other for the second straight year. Rivalries build. You got something to look back on and reflect on how things went down a year ago. I love this playoff format. Do not ever change this. And a Rangers-New Jersey Devils series, how awesome is something like that with one of them going out in the first round? The second round, the Rangers or the Devils could say, hey, we got to the division final. That's good. No, like it's insult after you load it up when you go out in the first round. That's a New York style series right there. They both loaded up and one of them's going to go out in the first round. That's a New Jersey insult going at you if you fall out. So I love it. And they're out in Long Island just going, can we get in? We don't care if somebody's insulting us in this case. Can we just get in? And in the West, people are just nibbling. Nothing's seriously happened as I record this with producer Bob around the Western Conference. And it's wide open. Does a move accelerate your chances to go all the way to a Stanley Cup final? And then you roll the dice against one of these superpowers in the Eastern Conference. Really interested to see what's going to happen. I keep waiting for Edmonton, waiting for LA, waiting for a team like Winnipeg to really get into it. Colorado, they're just ripping it off right now. I had a chance to watch them in person this week, and they are outstanding. Mikko Rantanen, just lighten it up, over 40 goals. Like all the players they've had, and he's like the fastest to 40 goals. That gives you an idea of how good that player is. And then what happens with the Dallas Stars? We'll get into it a little bit, talk about what's going on in the trade deadline discussion with Pete DeBoer, head coach of the Dallas Stars, a good buddy of mine that I got to spend some time with in Vegas over the previous couple of years and really connected with him. Fun guy, and we will let you get a sense of that relationship as we talk about his team and his run in the Western Conference right now and the Central Division on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Be honest with me. Are you slightly nervous about this conversation?
Always with you. Always.
Because we never really know where it's going to go.
Let me put it on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm about a 7 with you. If Gary Lawless was involved, it would jump to an immediate 9.5.
I'm going to tell him. I'm going to tell him that. Okay. I never worked for a team before I came to Vegas. I've discovered one thing. I've troubled keeping track of the days. Do you ever forget what day it is?
All the time. I have no idea. All the time. I don't know if I'm coming or going. I don't know what day of the week it is. Holidays and birthdays are forgotten. It's a tough life, man.
It's just scattered. It's all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you live off your team itinerary, right? That's, I pay more attention to that than anything in my world. It's, where do I have to be? What time tomorrow? What time is the plane leave? It's a blur. When people talk about the NHL season, coaches and it looks great. We have summers off and we do have some great benefits to it. But, once that sprint starts and the season starts, it's nonstop.
You are our last conversation in the coaching carousel with Jim Montgomery and Bruce Cassidy and this whole circle of life that's occurred. First of all, Monty has the good nickname. Butch has the cool nickname. What's yours?
You know what? Both my sons play hockey, as you know, and their nickname is Debo on their teams that they're on. I had a nickname when I played junior in Ontario growing up. I was playing junior C. I was 15 years old and about 160 pounds, and they called me Bullet because I couldn't, honestly, my shot wouldn't break a plane of glass from 5 feet away. So if you go to my hometown in Dunville, Ontario, I'm still referred to as Bullet, but other than that, it's mostly Pete.
What do you make of the success that the three of you have enjoyed this year?
I think, Darren, when you get to this level, every coach in this league is a really good coach. And you know what? It's unfortunate. I'm gonna paint your profession a little bit with this broad brush. But as the Romans used to say in the old Colosseum, the people want to see blood. When the team's not doing well, someone better bleed. And I think at this level, a lot of time the coach gets that, and we know that going in. The reality is, if you're at this level, every guy that's working in this league is excellent at what he does. And I would go even deeper than that and say the 30 something guys at the American League level and probably another 80 or 90 junior college coaches are excellent at what they do. And I'm not saying totally interchangeable, but definitely in could easily fit in that in any of those conversations. So, I think, you've got great coaches that have been put in spots with good teams, and it shouldn't surprise that, they're having success.
You jumped right back in. Did you surprise yourself with that?
Not really. You know what? I this is my 15th, 16th year in this league, and I've never sat out a season waiting to get a job. The closest I've been, I got fired in Florida after my first job, and I wasn't sure if I was going to get a head coaching job again immediately. And I thought, I might have to look at it, some associate coaching positions, maybe do like Monty did and take a step back for a couple of years until I got the next one. And I got one call that summer. It was Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey, and I got that job. And since then I've worked continuously. I never thought of my time in Vegas as a failure. In fact, I thought it was one of the better coaching jobs that I've done in my career. So I've got my head in the sand a little bit, but I felt that we did a good enough job that someone would call.
I don't put my head in the sand in Vegas because the caliche hurts too much. That rock, you just knock yourself out. Trust me, I've done that. Bang my
You've
head on the
that.
Rock.
Yeah. You've done that.
Are you watching this trade deadline lead up and the arms race in the East?
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. When you think about two of those top four teams are done in the first round and the amount of resources and the loading up that's been done and how good those teams are and how deep they are. Two of them are done in the first round and probably three of the top four are done at the end of the second round. So, but that's the beauty of the NHL. If you get into the playoffs, everybody has a chance. And, you know, the pursuit of a Stanley Cup is all encompassing. You know, there's no price you won't pay to get there. And I've been to two finals, lost in game six both times. And I can tell you, watching the other team, it looks like there's nothing greater than to go down through that journey from start of the season, through the trade deadline, through the playoffs and win. I can tell you there's nothing worse than getting to the end to a game six like that and or seven and losing at the very end. So, you know, I don't want to go through that again.
This is a stupid question, but will winning feel as good as losing feels bad?
I don't think it ever does. No.
Yeah.
No. I think, and that's not just the Stanley Cup. I think that's even during the regular season. You know, we wear the losses way harder. And the coaches wear them harder than the players, but the players still wear them too. And they would tell you, you know, the highs are great, but the lows you really drag around.
I want to run through some players with you. What did you know about Jason Robertson?
I didn't know much, but wow, what an athlete, what a person, really unique individual. Like when you talk about, you know, over the last decade, we've kind of talked about, you know, getting personalities in the game in hockey, you know, like they have in some other sports. You know, this guy is one of those guys. I mean, he beats to his own drum. He's a very intelligent guy. He sees the game, you know, in a different way than a lot of players, which makes him great. You know, he's got a really diverse background with his parents, and you know, he's been great to work with.
What's something we don't know or don't appreciate about him?
Maybe the best work ethic I've ever seen. Like this guy pregame skates. If we've got an hour of ice, he's out there for an hour. It's unbelievable. If we've got an optional, I'll give you an example. We went to the All-Star game. And it's an all-star game, 3-on-3. So they have pregame ice just because it's the NHL. There's pregame ice. There was four or five all-star players out there in their jeans with their kids because it was their chance for their kids to skate. And there was Jason Robertson in full gear working on his skills. The only guy. True story. Just shows you, you know, his preparation, his work ethic. You know, it just it's unmatched.
Did you know he could defend a 2-on-1 in overtime? or not overtime, but late in the game with an empty net.
You learned that the hard way, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought it was great the way he attacked the play.
Yeah, you know what? Unbelievable. And not only did he defend it, he got up off the ice, went down, and made the play on the tying goal too.
Yeah, that part of aggressiveness was great. What about Jake Oettinger, who you knew a little bit because he played with your son Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, Jake had played at Boston University with my son, so I got to meet him his last year in college, which is my son's first. And just I obviously wasn't coaching Dallas at the time, so you know I knew he was a draft pick. I was really impressed with the young man at that point, but you know wasn't obviously invested in him because I wasn't working with him. Once I got him here. Exceptional goalie, but even more exceptional kid. Like there's very few goalies I've been around, and this isn't a knock on you, but you know, most of these guys aren't part of your leadership group or would be the captain of the team if they were allowed to be the captain of the team. They just kind of, you know, they've always kind of just done their own thing and, you know, are part of it. But this guy, he could wear a letter in the NHL. I mean, he's got that type of leadership. People gravitate towards him like that. Probably a lot like you in the men's league locker room down there in Henderson, but
bringing people together, buddy, bringing people together. Is it true that you once referred to my body as a bag of milk?
True story. On the air in Las Vegas. So Have you seen the people walking by you now taking another look with that thought in the back of their mind?
2% or 1%? I wonder. That's what they're thinking. Do you and Joe Pavelski have telepathy? Is there that deep?
You know what? If not my favorite player I've ever coached in that conversation, just a joy to be around. I mean, 38 years old, like Joe Thornton. I put those guys in the same category. Show up every day, smile on their face, ready to work, love the game, love to win, want to be part of the solution when you're not winning and losing, take that accountability on themselves to how can I help? Great with the young guys. I mean, he has Wyatt Johnson moved into his house. Funny story. So Wyatt Johnson's a 19-year-old rookie, and Jim Nill and I and Steve Spott are talking about how, you know, wouldn't it be great if he could live with a family this year instead of on his own? You know, the kid's been living in a billet in Windsor for the Spitfires. I don't think he's ever cooked a meal for himself. So Spotter goes, let me call Joe Pavelski and see. And Steve Spott has a dog, a Labrador retriever named Wyatt. So Spotter calls Pav and says, you know, Pav, we're thinking, you know, about placing Wyatt, you know, would you have, you know, any room for him in your house? Pav goes, well, I've got two dogs, Spot. As long as he gets along with my two dogs,
it'll be all right. No way.
Spotter goes, no, Wyatt Johnson, our rookie. True story.
Was it the same answer? As long as he gets along with the dogs.
Yeah, same answer.
Wow. But yeah. That's a cool bond that they've got, though.
Great bond. And you know what? This Wyatt Johnson is going to be a real special player for a long time. And I have no doubt in my mind he's going to look back on his first year in the league living with Joe and what he learned and how to be a pro, how to act, you know, as a foundation for a great career. Because he's got an education from Joe this year that is invaluable.
Somebody asked me the other day when you played Vegas and we were watching if Jamie Benn has changed his workout regime or it's because of the system that you're playing with more pace, because he does look quicker up the ice.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think Jamie Benn's always been a hardworking training guy. Like when you talk to the strength people here, I mean, this guy's never... You know, his nickname's Chubbs. He came in as a 19, 20-year-old, I think, you know, was a chunky kid. And I think, you know, since he got into the league, I think, you know, he's worked continuously at his body and getting quicker and leaner. And so that's never been an issue. But I think he's realized as he's got older, maybe you have to play a little bit lighter, you know, maybe less weights. But I also think, you know, the way we're playing allows him to move a little quicker. And I think his line mates have helped him there too.
Have you been to South Fork Ranch?
No, I haven't. No. Is that the Dallas TV show?
Yeah.
Well, no,
there's like 2% of the audience listening to this that understands what I'm talking about with South Fork Ranch. But
my wife was into that. But you know, were you sitting home watching Dallas in the 80s?
I like JR because he was a real prick and he got what he wanted. And I appreciated that because I could never be that guy.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it's obviously big here. It's an interesting state to work in. People are fantastic. Still getting used to the open carry gun laws and you know, that's a little off-putting sometimes when you're walking around. You're not used to that being a Canadian, but I couldn't be happier with the city and how the people have treated us here.
Sue and I always got along well.
I knew it. Yes, you did.
What about the landscape of the West? How do you make what you were seeing going into this trade deadline?
Well, you know, I do believe it's wide open. I think you could throw a blanket over 8 or 10 teams and anybody could win. I think Colorado, you know, went through the first half of the year or up until now, what we went through in Vegas last year. And, you know, I kind of stumbled around through it the best they can. But they're getting healthy now. And, you know, I think they're starting to find a level that everyone thought they would play at. So for me, that's still the team to beat. And then, you know, there's a blanket over a whole lot of other teams here, you know, that I think are interchangeable.
When you look forward, and I don't want to look too far forward, but I'm curious, with the Barry Trotz announcement this week, longtime coach, becoming a manager, you played both those roles in junior hockey. Would you like to be a manager one day?
No chance. Zero.
Really?
No, I'm, you know, when I retire from coaching, you'll find me on a boat or, on the golf course or fishing somewhere. You know, this game, I exchanged texts with Barry yesterday. I think it's fantastic. I think there's no doubt. There's a lot of coaches, I think, that have the hockey acumen and the sense and the leadership and the management styles to do that. And Barry's definitely one of them. And I think he's going to be excellent at it. And, you know, I like the fact that, you know, it's a coach friendly GM going into the league, a guy that stood behind the bench on an NHL bench and knows what that grind is like. Cause I don't think, I think sometimes that gets lost, you know, until you have stood back there and know what that's like. So the more of those guys, the better for me. I worked for Jacques Martin my first year in the NHL. He had won 500 games as a coach prior to that. You know, I really think that's one of the reasons I'm still here coaching in this league, is I had a GM like that, that had stood in the fire and been there and had the patience to understand exactly what we were going through. So for me, I think Barry's going to be great for whatever coach works there. Hopefully it's John Hines, who I'm a big fan of. You know, but for Pete DeBoer, you will not see him in management. You might not even see me in a rink, Darren. You might have to find me out in the middle of the lake here on somewhere.
No, because now the boys are running hockey schools. Like, you got to be back in there. You got to help them out, right?
Oh, I know. Yeah, you're right about that. You're right about that. I'm sure I'll get sucked into some of that work.
What's the name of the J and J and M? What's the hockey school name?
MJ Skills.
MJ Skills. Okay.
Yeah, and we're running like 10 weeks of hockey schools and leagues around Stratford, Ontario. A lot of Stratford, Ontario, but it includes the Huron, Perth, and Kitchener Waterloo area. So, yeah, exciting times. Full circle. You know, Steve Spott and I started our coaching careers running hockey schools, Seneca College in Toronto. Steve Spott was the head of the Seneca College hockey school, and he hired me and Adam Graves and, you know, a whole bunch of our buddies to work during the summer there, and some of the best summers of my life. So, you know, it's kind of full circle.
A good chance to see the next McDavid, what you're watching with him right now. 50.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable. And you know what? I think he makes it look easy. You know, I think that's the scary part. And he's so motivated. You know, I remember watching an interview with him, because I was part of the Canadian Olympic coaching staff with Barry Trotz and Bruce Cassidy and John Cooper. And when we didn't get to go to the Olympics because of COVID, there was no one more disappointed than Connor McDavid. Like, this guy doesn't just want to lead the NHL in scoring and win a Stanley Cup. He wants to do it on the world stage. Like, that's really important to him. And there's nobody that wanted to play in an Olympic Games best on best more than he did. So that shows you his inner drive. You know, it's Gretzky like.
If you're defending him one on one, what does Pete DeBoer do?
Help. You remember we played in Tahoe and Alex Pietrangelo was backpedaling with McKinnon coming on.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh shit," or "help" or something.
Oh boy.
That reaction, but probably, or stop, drop, and roll around. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it would be.
Something like just throw all the gloves and hope he trips over something. This has been tons of fun. Love catching up with you, of course, and we exchange our messages. But this is really cool to hear people hear from you about what you're going through right now in this journey with the Dallas Stars. And I got to admit, I asked the question about the GM. I thought there would be a chance there. And it must be a nice boat.
Zero.
Must be a really nice boat. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
He's a good guy. Awesome dude. His boys, Maddie and Jack, are incredible human beings. So one of the great ones, Steve Spott, to his assistant coach. Love him and appreciate the time. But that carousel with Bruce Cassidy, who we had the fireside chat with a couple of weeks ago and really got to know him, and Jim Montgomery. It's just amazing how that's all circled around, and all three are right there, first place
and making things happen in their respective division right now and have hopes of going really deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Joe Pavelski, I love the relationship that they have, but I got to admit, when he was Pete was telling us that story about Spot reaching out to Pavelski about Wyatt Johnson, I started thinking, like, I've got dogs named Austin and Norm. Like, what if I had to reach out and the same type of thing? I can't be friends with a Norm or an Austin. Oreo's going to be just fine. That just, you don't get that anywhere else other than the chirp with Darren Millard. And if you're leading up to the trade deadline and you're still wondering what's going to happen, the episode with Dreger last week stands up. There's still so much. We touched on the big stuff that's happening, and he was dialed in on that stuff. But there's still some different movement that is to take place that Dreger is really locked in on. So listen to that episode last week. Do yourself a favor, and you'll just be ahead of the curve when the stuff does come down, and you'll be able to walk over and to the next cubicle or phone your buddy and say, hey, this happened. I heard it on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Thanks to producer Bob. Thanks to Pete for stopping by. Bag of milk. Hey, calcium, folks. It's never a bad thing. Makes those bones stronger. We'll talk to you next week after the trade deadline on The Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.